Welcome to Tune In to the World of Animation, the weekly podcast that brings you interviews with experts from all aspects of the world of animation. I'm your host, T. Basusto, ready to sit back, relax, and tune in to the world of animation. And our new theme music was composed and performed by our guest today, Frank Macchia. He's a musician, a composer, and an arranger who has a penchant towards comedy, which led him in a roundabout way to the animation business. I've worked with Frank a number of times. I think he's one of the most versatile composers I've ever known. So, Frank, why don't we start in your very early days when you were 10 years old in San Francisco?
Oh, my gosh. At 10 years old, I was probably just starting to get into music. At around 12, I started playing clarinet and then moved to bassoon and then saxophone and flutes. And between that, trying to figure out the piano on my own a bit, but mostly using it towards trying to write pieces of music. Even as a kid, I had a lot of ideas of music I wanted to write for orchestra at that point. Back in those days, there weren't a lot of synthesizers and such, so a lot of the stuff I wanted to write, I remember having the idea of writing a multi-movement work on the universe, which actually still has never happened. I wrote an overture that my high school orchestra played at my graduation, and I had the San Francisco Symphony in high school at a program they had called Summer Music Workshop, where the San Francisco Symphony would come out and perform and do some seminars with us. I wrote a couple of pieces for like jazz quartet and orchestra, and we even did that stuff. I've always was from about the age of 12 or so very much into music, and then went to Boston, went to Berklee College of Music, and got a degree in composition there so I could try and understand more about the techniques of the sounds and ideas that were in my head and how to get them out of there onto the music page.
It seems like you have such a variety. I mean, you do classical music and jazz and animation. I mean, and it's all wonderful.
Well, I love all kinds of music. When I was in high school playing saxophone, I played in a lot of rock and what they call R&B funk bands. So I was playing a lot of, especially in the Bay Area, music by bands like Tower of Power and Earth, Wind & Fire and things like that. And so I've always loved R&B and funk music and, you know, playing in school orchestras, I learned a lot of the classical repertoire, and Stravinsky was always, you know, ever when I was a kid, seeing Fantasia and seeing that segment with the dinosaurs, that music just floored me. I was just, what is this music? I've got to find out what this is, and found out later it was Igor Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring, which is not written for that. It was written 30-some-odd years earlier as a ballet suite of pagan dance rituals is what it was based on. But they, you know, Walt Disney used that music and saw it as showing the formation of the earth and the coming of the dinosaurs and the passing of the dinosaurs. And I just was riveted by that as a child. And so I've just always loved all kinds of music. And
some of that sequence was animated by my dad.
No kidding.
When he worked at Disney.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow,
so
that's great.
That was sort of his claim to fame. Well, it wasn't really his claim to fame at Disney because he went into story. But
yeah.
But yeah, that Fantasia in particular was a wonderful film.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. I've got a son who just turned 5, and we got the DVD of Fantasia, and that same section, he just loves it too. Yeah, he watches it all the time, so it's a lot of fun seeing him be interested.
I'm wondering how, well, before we get there, you also played backup for a number of very well-known people.
Yeah, well, for a period after I went to college in Boston, I moved back to San Francisco and lived there pretty much through the 1980s, and I ended up doing a lot of what they call casual work, which is playing conventions and weddings and parties and things like that, and worked a lot with what they call like pickup orchestras, backing up different artists like Tony Bennett and Ella Fitzgerald and Rita Moreno and just different artists like that would be doing a show in town, and they'd put a band together, and I'd be in the sax section playing sax and clarinet and flute and doing a lot of things like that. And so there were a lot of, San Francisco's a great town for conventions and parties and things, so I did a good amount of work doing that through the 1980s.
Do you have a musical family?
No, actually not at all.
Really?
My dad was a banker. My mom worked for the phone company. Okay. And they really were not very happy when I was so interested in getting into music in high school and wanted to go, especially going to Berklee College of Music. They're like, don't you want to get a business degree and make sure you can make a living? And I was just adamant of I need to go to this music school. But they were very supportive of me. And even though they didn't quite understand the music that I was interested in any of that, they were very supportive.
Oh,
and
that's good.
I guess they saw that I really wanted to do it.
Right. Do you remember what first sparked your interest?
Not really. I always loved listening to music. When I was in high school, having played in bands, you know, in school bands, playing clarinet and then bassoon. And bassoon is why I played in high school in orchestra. But I wanted to play saxophone because I liked listening to more jazzy and R&B kind of music. And so it's like, I can't do that on the bassoon. I got my dad to get me a saxophone. I started taking sax lessons and started playing that music. But I always listened to a lot of that music. I remember I had a part-time job through high school, and I would, whatever extra money I made, every week I'd go to the used record store and try and buy five $2 albums, and they're all scratched up and made lots of noises and hiss, but I was like a sponge. I just wanted to listen to as much music as possible and just hear all this different stuff and absorb all the ideas and sounds.
Well, we'd like to hear some of your music, but first let me take a break. What I'd love to do is listen to the full piece that we took a chunk out of for the opening.
Okay.
So let's tell our listeners that this show is being brought to you in part by the UPA Legacy Project, dedicated to collect, restore, and exhibit the films of UPA, the creators of Mr. Magoo, Gerald McBoing-Boing, and a new modern style of animation. You can find out more about their documentary feature now in production at www.upapix.com. That's one word, upapix.com. So back to Frank Macchia and this piece that we use a bit of for the opening of the show. And what is it called?
It's called Bobo Takes a Stroll.
And before we listen to it, why don't you set it up a little bit?
Well, this is a piece that is actually... Hopefully it gives you the impression that it's written to a picture, but it actually wasn't. The picture was in my head as I wrote it, and I created a fictional cartoon character named Bobo, which you can use your own imagination to conjure up what he looks like. And basically he's taking a stroll. So at the beginning of the song, we hear this little theme of his as he's taking a stroll, and a series of events happen to him. Hopefully I can remember these in order. First, he takes a wrong turn on his stroll and he ends up in a jungle. Then he comes out of there and he ends up taking a fall into a deep hole, comes out of that, and then he's abducted by aliens, as you'll hear a spaceship, hopefully, and some celestial voices. Then after that, he gets dropped back onto the earth and dropped on his head, and so he's a little dazed, so he's kind of spinning around, wandering, and he's way off his path at this point. And then he ends up in a forest, I believe, and he's kind of sneaking around trying to find his way around, and then suddenly someone's chasing him, so there's a little chase section that hopefully will make sense to you. And then at the end of the chase, he's totally lost, and you hear a very sad little section for a few moments of some very sad violin music as he's just sitting there trying to figure out what to do. And then suddenly he gets an idea and he starts running around again, trying to find his way back onto the path. And then he finds his way onto the path, and we hear a kind of a triumphant march as he's finding his way back home. And then finally he gets back onto the path, and we hear his theme at the end. And that's it.
Okay. Well, let's take a listen to it. Thank you. that's like every cartoon piece I've ever heard for any cartoon all rolled into one piece.
Well, that was the idea. I did that when I first moved to Los Angeles in 1992. I kind of did it all in my home studio and brought over a few different instrumentalists, a trumpeter and a trombonist, and I played all the woodwinds and saxophones, and I brought a violinist over, and my wife, Tracy London, did vocal stuff on it. And I put that together with some other pieces, trying to get work, trying to get animation work, because for whatever reason, a lot of people had said to me that a lot of my music in the past had a very comic flair and could work well for animation music. So, and I grew up, again, loving the Warner Brothers cartoons and loved the music of Carl Stallings on that. So he was a big hero of mine. Right, so. Right.
You've had a number of groups. I saw on your website there were the Gleets, the Desperate Character, and the Frank Maximum Band, which I had known before. But what were all those?
Well, they're all different formations. I actually started when I was, after I had graduated from college in Boston in 1980 or so, I formed a jazz fusion band there called Booga Booga. And that was probably a lot of the origins, because it was jazz. It was kind of like Frank Zappa-esque jazz kind of music, but it had a lot of comic overtones in that. And I decided after a couple years of bouncing around in Boston that I just didn't like the winters there anymore, and I wanted to move back to San Francisco. So I moved back there, and several of the members of the band moved back with me. So we started the Booga Booga band back up in San Francisco, and it basically kind of went through some different incarnations. Desperate Character and the Gleets were two different versions of the band, where we kind of went more to, at that point in the early 80s, new wave music was the big thing. So we're kind of trying to get away from jazz because that wasn't going to sell for us as well. So those were kind of more like rock, new wave kind of bands. And then later in the 80s, I put together a new band, which was the Frankie Maximum Band, which was kind of more of an R&B band. It was a pretty large band. I think it was a 10-piece band. And
we're going to put the picture of that up on the our website.
Oh, great.
But I couldn't pick out which one was you.
Yeah, well, I had hair back then. So.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I'm somewhere in there.
Oh, okay. But incidentally, if anybody wants to go to Frank's website, we're going to have that on our own website, so you can just link to his site, and he's got some free downloads of some of his music. And
yeah, in fact, the Bobo Takes a Stroll song there we just listened to, if you go to the free music, I think, or free MP3s page, there's over an hour's worth of music on there, and one of the pieces on there is Bobo Takes a Stroll.
And any kind of music you like, Frank's done it.
Hopefully.
One of the funniest ones that I've heard of the albums was, I think it's called Way or Out West.
Right, yeah. Right. I did that. That was kind of one of the last things I did up in the Bay Area. And that was kind of with like what I call a mini big band. It had four brass players and four sax players, also doubling on flutes and clarinets and rhythm section and vocalists. And I just got this idea about taking a bunch of traditional cowboy songs and doing kind of whacked out arrangements of them. And so we did things like Home on the Range and Turkey in the Straw. And we have this song called Ringo, which was, I think, Lorne Greene originally sang something like that. And we did it as a hip hop kind of tune. It kind of works in a strange way.
Yeah, I think it works. The whole album's great. So, well, I love all your albums because they're so different. I mean, the Galapagos Suite is
I started a few years ago kind of getting back to my jazz roots again. So I did a group of albums based on animals. My wife and I took a trip 4 or 5 years ago to the Galapagos Islands. And so I did a CD called The Galapagos Suite, where I based each movement on an animal on a particular island that we were on, trying to give a flavor of each island and a certain kind of animal that was somewhat indigenous to that island. And I enjoyed that so much that then I did two subsequent albums, one called Animals and one called Mo Animals,
right,
that
Mo Animals.
I just basically take the name of an animal, such as dolphins or chickens. We've got all kinds of different animals, and try to do my impression musically, how I would imagine music would go, sound like under, if you were looking at a few minutes of watching, say, some pigs rolling in the mud or lions in nature, different animals. So, and the latest one now I've done is one called Emotions, which I did with a orchestra. I used the Prague Orchestra and strings and woodwinds and harps and saxophone. And the challenge on that album was I wanted to do a combination of jazz / classical and try and do it without using the traditional rhythm section for jazz, which is like piano, bass, and drums. So it's just the orchestra and saxophone, but I'm trying to make the orchestra have all the rhythm and what you would call the motion and pulsating kind of qualities that a rhythm section would give you. So I tried incorporating that in writing for that, and hopefully I got through got that to happen.
So, Frank, let's play these. Do you have anything to say before we listen to these other two pieces?
Oh, just they're just a couple of. I just brought these along because basically I have the rights to them, and we don't have to go through any technical contractual obligations to play them. These are just two pieces that I wrote for a couple of animated shows that didn't quite make it. They didn't make it onto the airwaves. One was called Rainbow's World that I think was in development at Film Roman. And the other was called The Hollyweirds that I'm not sure that got picked up anywhere, but they were both shows that were conceived by a very good friend of mine, incredibly talented animator and just writer, creator. He does the whole thing. He puts it all together. His name is Guy Vasilovich. He's been an enormous help in my career at times. He was working at Nickelodeon, and I ended up composing music to several of his short cartoons that were part of a collection called Oh Yeah Cartoons that was on Nickelodeon. And we did some other projects through Film Roman and Warner's. We had one thing that again didn't quite make the light of day, but he's a great guy. He's got series all over on the air and everything. So these are two short themes. One, the first one's Rainbow's World. The second is The Hollyweirds Mambo.
So you've done a lot of music for, obviously, animation that has gone on the air, or features as well, for what, Nickelodeon and Disney?
Yeah, and one way I work a lot down here in Los Angeles is I work as an orchestrator for several composers. A lot of people go, what is an orchestrator? And the way things kind of work in music these days in the film business is that there's just so little time that the composer now, where in the good old days he would actually have a couple of months to sit down and write by hand a score and notate it all out for the orchestra. And he would give those scores to what are called music copyists, who would copy all the individual parts for the players to do. Well, now there's just no time for that. A composer is lucky to have a couple of weeks to write 60, 70 minutes of music for a film. So with the aid of technology now, composers pretty much all use what's called a sequencer program on their computer, and they have samples of all the different instruments of the orchestra. So they basically kind of put everything, they play everything into the computer and the sequencer program. And then the director and producers come over and listen to these mock-ups of the music that will eventually be done by an orchestra. And they, of course, have their comments and possible changes and whatever. But once everything's signed off on, then the composer gives those sequences to someone like me, and I transcribe what all the events are that they were played in there, and I turn that into notation for orchestra, and I create a score. So I orchestrate out everything that was played in through all these different synthesizers and samplers, and create scores that then go to the copyists, who then copy the parts. And so over the years, I've worked for a number of great composers like John Ottman, Mark Isham, Larry Gruppe, George S. Clinton. This last year here, I worked on the Superman Returns movie. I orchestrated several cues on that. One of the big ones, if you've seen the movie, the whole cue where the airplane is coming down and he captures the plane and brings it down safely into a baseball field, I think it is. The cue was called Rough Flight, and it was about a 6 to 7 minute cue of just millions of notes. It was a lot of work. It was more work probably for John Ottman putting it together, It was a lot of work orchestrating that as well. But it was a lot of fun. It's really fun. It was like a 100-piece orchestra to go into the scoring stage and hear them playing that. That was very exciting.
Yeah. Do you do anything differently when you write or orchestrate music for animation than other?
Well, no, it's pretty much, you know, I'm wearing different hats as an orchestrator. I'm not really as creative, certainly not as creative as the composer. He's actually coming up with the tempo of the music, the melody, the counter melody, the rhythm, all those elements.